KJAN Sports.
Time for Check of Sports. Good morning. I'm Jim Field. In high school volleyball action around the area last night in the Hawkeye 10 Conference, it was Shenandoah beating Atlantic 3-0. Clarinda over Denison in 3 straight. Kemper Catholic downing Red Oak 3-1. Lewis Central downing Creston 3-1. And Harlan topping Glenwood in 3 straight games. In Western Iowa Conference play last night, Audubon beat Riverside 3 in a row. It was Missouri Valley over AHST 3-0. Tri-Center beat Griswold 3-0. Also Underwood, a winner over Trainer, 3-2. In Rolling Hills Conference play last night, it was Adair Casey over Exira EHK in 3 straight. Glidden Ralston, a 3-game sweep over Iowa Christian. And Grandview Park Baptist swept 3 from Peyton Sherdan. Elsewhere around the region in volleyball, it was Arweva over West Harrison 3-1. Bedford 3-1 over Lennox. Carroll swept 3 from Perry. Earlham took 3 in a row from Coon Rapids Bayard. East Mills beat Clarinda Academy 3-0. It was East Union over Corning in 3 straight. Fremont Mills beat Sydney 3-1. Nottoway Valley, a 3-1 winner over Mount Air. St. Albert beat Omaha Mercy 3-0. Stanton, a 3-game sweep over Nishnabotna. Van Meter beat Panorama 3-1. Villisca, 3-game sweep over Heartland Christian. West Monona took 3 straight from Charter Oak Ute. And Woodbury Central also took 2 straight from Charter Oak Ute last night. Iowa football coach Kirk Ferentz says the Hawkeyes' slow start is not the fault of quarterback James Vandenberg. The senior has only 1 touchdown pass through 4 games, and the passing game is averaging 202 yards in a 2-2 start. That's down more than 30 yards from a year ago.
You know, to just look at the quarterback, which I understand is what everybody does in offensive analysis, it's not quite as simple as that. I'll just say this. I'm glad he's our quarterback, and, you know, I'm glad he's going to be our quarterback the next 8 games. You know, so it's I think he's a heck of a player, and I think he's a heck of a young man.
Ferentz says there are a number of reasons for the slow start, and while the Hawkeyes are making progress in some areas, there's nothing that the coach is satisfied with at this point.
You could say the same about our coaching. So we're 2-2 right now. So, you know, real simply, if we'd scored 33 the other day, we win. If we had scored or held Iowa State to 5, we'd win that game too. So yeah, that's the bottom line.
Well, the Hawkeyes open the Big Ten race at home against Minnesota Saturday, and Ferentz says this is a better Gopher team than the ones that beat the Hawkeyes the last 2 years.
They're 4-0, first of all. I think I read somewhere it's the first time they've done it since 08, since they've started this fast. All you have to do is watch them play on film. They're really playing well. They're playing with confidence. They're playing fast, and part of that second year in the system, I think. But they've done a great job up there. The coaching staff's done a great job, and most importantly, the players are really playing well.
Well, Minnesota begins Big Ten play as one of only 3 undefeated teams left in the conference, enjoying a 4-0 start for the first time since the 2008 season. But while the Gophers are relishing their September success, already beating their victory total in each of the last 2 years, they're trying to maintain perspective. These weren't nationally ranked opponents they've been beating, and also 2/3 of the schedule remains, so there's no sense in celebrating yet. Rival Iowa's up on Saturday, and though the Gophers have 2 straight wins over the Hawkeyes, they haven't won at Kinnick Stadium since 1999. Though Iowa has slipped in recent seasons, Minnesota is expecting a fired-up opponent with the Floyd of Rosedale Bronze Pig Trophy at stake on Saturday. You can catch that game here on the radio Saturday. 9 a.m. is pregame, 11:05 is kickoff. Well, the UNI football team situation has not changed in the wake of their loss at Youngstown State last Saturday. Panther coach Mark Farley says his team still has their backs against the wall, with defending FCS champion North Dakota State visiting the Unidome this Saturday. Farley says that Saturday's game will test just how tough his team is.
Well, that's the question in his hands. How resilient are we, and how quickly? That was when I went into the season. You could have been 3-1 at this point, 2-2, or whatever the outcome. Who knew going into this football game? So with a team like this, you just don't know. You need to get some momentum, no matter what team you have. It doesn't matter how old or experienced they are. You need momentum. We just haven't been able to break that momentum.
A loss to the Bison would likely deal a big blow to UNI's chances of making the FCS playoffs, but Farley says his team can't be worried about that. UNI's 3 losses have come against 2 Big Ten opponents and the third-ranked team in FCS, and those 3 games have been decided by a total of 23 points. Farley says he's confident that the things the Panthers are doing will work, but they have to do a better job of completing their games.
We just have to finish, you know, stay in the plays we're in. We've been in some battles. We played number 3, Wisconsin, and Iowa. I mean, we just got to finish those games and gain momentum and just believe in what we do. I'm not going to change anything. We know what we do works, and we know that that we can be successful. We just have to stay with the plan. I'm not changing. We just have to clean it up and finish.
Well, the 14th-ranked Panthers host the number one Bison Saturday night. UNI has two wins in six matchups against number one teams in the program's history. Well, Notre Dame has notified Michigan that it's exercising a three-year out in their contract. That means their last scheduled game against each other will come in 2014, 127 years after their first meeting. Michigan Athletic Director Dave Brandon tells the Associated Press that Notre Dame counterpart Jack Swarbrick handed him a letter before Saturday's 13-6 loss to the Fighting Irish, canceling games in 2015, 16, and 17. The Irish recently decided to move to the Atlantic Coast Conference in sports other than in football, with a provision to play five football games a year against ACC opponents. Well, the NFL has weighed in on the call that allowed the Seattle Seahawks to beat the Green Bay Packers on Monday night. So have Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, along with numerous players and a host of gamblers. The league says the replacement officials made the correct call not to overturn Seahawks receiver Golden Tate's 24-yard scoring reception. However, the NFL also said Tate should have been called for offensive pass interference before the catch, but pointed out that penalties can't be reviewed by instant replay. A flag would have clinched the game for the Packers. Obama said the disputed call was terrible and declared it time to get the regular NFL officiating crews back on the job. Romney and GOP running mate Paul Ryan, a Wisconsin native, also said it was time to bring back the real refs. Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers was still angry about the call a day later. He said on his weekly radio show in Milwaukee that, quote, "Our sport is generated, the multi-billion dollar machine is generated by people who pay good money to watch us play, and the product that's on the field is not being complimented by an appropriate set of officials." Meanwhile, Tom Brady is staying out of the chorus of complainers about replacement officials, saying they're doing the best they can. He says the game officials are not responsible for the Patriots' 1-2 start and puts the blame on himself and the team. Also, Las Vegas odds makers say $300 million or more changed hands worldwide on a controversial referee call that decided the game. Gambling expert R.J. Bell of Las Vegas-based pregame.com says he thinks two-thirds of bets worldwide were on the Packers and that sportsbooks took in at least $150 million because of the call. The rainbow amid the dark clouds is that the league resumed negotiations with the locked-out officials yesterday. Denver Broncos linebacker Joe Mays has been suspended for this week's game against the Raiders and fined $50,000 by the NFL for his hit on Texans quarterback Matt Schaub last Sunday. Mays drew a roughing the passer penalty for his third quarter hit on Schaub, who lost part of his earlobe when his helmet flew off. A person familiar with the process says that Mays will appeal. Well, they're all tied with eight games to play. That's where the Detroit Tigers and the Chicago White Sox find themselves atop the American League Central. Anibal Sanchez fired a three-hitter, and the Tigers pulled even with Chicago by downing the Royals 2-0. Prince Fielder and Delmon Young provided RBI singles in the first inning to support Sanchez's first shutout in over a year. The Tigers were given a chance to move into a first-place tie when the Chicago White Sox lost 4-3 to Cleveland yesterday afternoon. The Indians built a 4-0 lead and hung on despite solo homers by A.J. Pierzynski, Diane Viciato, and Paul Konerko. The White Sox had the potential tying run in scoring position when Gordon Beckham hit into a game-ending force out. Chicago held a three-game division lead on the morning of September 19th. The New York Yankees remain a game and a half ahead of second-place Baltimore in the AL East after both teams lost yesterday. Denard Span hit a two-run double while Minnesota was scoring four times in the seventh inning to turn a 3-1 deficit into a 5-4 win over the Yankees. Baltimore was shut out by Toronto 4-0 as Aaron Laffey combined with five relievers on a six-hitter. The AL West race is also a little tighter after George Contreras led off the 10th inning with a homer to lift Oakland past Texas 3-2. Chris Carter tied it with a fourth-inning solo shot before the Athletics moved within four games behind the Rangers in the division. The A's also move within a half game of Baltimore for the first wildcard spot as the Angels remain two games behind Oakland after Zach Greinke allowed only a run while striking out a season-high 13 over five innings in a 5-4 win over Seattle. Tampa Bay made it six straight wins as the Rays try to catch Oakland in the wildcard standings. David Price improved to 19-5, tossing a seven-hitter, striking out 13 in the Rays' 5-2 win over Boston. In the National League, the Braves clinched a playoff berth with a dramatic 4-3 victory over Florida as Freddie Freeman won it with a two-run homer in the bottom of the ninth inning. Chipper Jones led off the ninth with a double, scored twice, and drove in a run for the Braves. Washington's lead in the NL East is down to 4 games over Atlanta following the Nationals' 6-3 loss at Philadelphia. Kept the Nats' magic number at 5. Johnny Cueto picked up his 19th victory, allowing 2 runs and 5 hits over 7 innings in Cincinnati's 4-2 win over Milwaukee. That outcome put the Brewers 4.5 games behind St. Louis for the NL's final wild card berth. The Cardinals picked up their 4th consecutive win as Jaime Garcia scattered 6 hits in 7 innings in a 4-0 shutout of Houston. John Jay drove in 2 runs for the defending World Series champs. The Dodgers were 2-1 losers in San Diego, putting Los Angeles 4.5 games behind the Redbirds in the wild card race, as Edinson Volquez outpitched Josh Beckett, limiting the Dodgers to 6 hits in 7 scoreless innings. Also in the National League, Paul Goldschmidt hit a 3-run homer and drove in a career-high 5 as Arizona whipped San Francisco 7-2. Pedro Alvarez launched a 3-run homer and had 4 RBIs as Pittsburgh beat the Mets 10-6. Also, it was the Colorado Rockies doubling up the Chicago Cubs 10-5 in a game called after 6.5 innings due to rain. The National Hockey League and its locked-out players are to return to the bargaining table on Friday. Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly and NHL Players Association Special Counsel Steve Fear met yesterday in Toronto and scheduled that session. The site has not yet been set. These will be the first formal negotiations since September 12th when the players and owners exchanged proposals. Neither of those offers gained much traction, and the lockout started at midnight on September 16th, the day training camps were scheduled to open. Clubs are feeling the pinch. According to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the St. Louis Blues have laid off what is believed to be just under 20 front office workers. The Florida Panthers and Ottawa Senators already have had layoffs. Other teams have said they could do so as well, depending upon how long that lockout lasts. That's Check of Sports this hour. I'm Jim Field, KJAN Sports.